Welcome to the School Sucks Project, a podcast, YouTube channel, and online community dedicated to personal growth and intellectual self-defense. We promote learning alternatives, home education, critical thinking, peaceful parenting, organization and productivity, and better communication strategies. Please remember to visit schoolsucksproject.com to get comprehensive show notes, infographics, relevant links, book suggestions, or just to leave comments. Follow us on Twitter at @SchoolSucksShow. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, username SchoolSucksPodcast, and get involved in our Facebook group. Just search for School Sucks Project.
Hey, everybody, this is Brett. Welcome back to the show. Today's October 19th. Sorry you haven't heard from me in a while. It has been a while. And there are a couple of reasons. First one, I really just wanted to let that last episode be for a while in the number one slot on the website and in the podcast feed. Episode 378. Did you hear it? Did you like it? Did you share it? One of my favorite shows of all time with Nick Hazelton. So if you haven't checked that out, please do so. Now, I didn't plan to do too much production in the latter half of October because I've got a couple of other projects that I'm working on. The one that I'm most excited about is writing the introduction for John Taylor Gatto's new edition of The Underground History of American Education. And I just wanted a super clean desk with very little on my to-do list in the second half of this month to really be able to focus my energy on that project and also some other things related to more behind-the-scenes long-term School Sucks Project planning, including an updated and much improved website hot dog. But I didn't want to come back from this awesome New York City trip empty-handed. So I brought the Zoom recorder and a couple of microphones, and we are going to finish up this month with an extended episode, 379. It will have four parts. It's four interviews that I did at the event. Also, check out the School Sucks Podcast YouTube channel. I managed to squeeze a little bit of video content out of one of these interviews with Jeffrey Tucker. Oh, what a great discussion we had. What a great speech he gave at this event. And I was just super energized by this whole experience. So I want to say a huge and sincere thank you to the people who donate to this program, either one-time donations or as monthly subscribers, because you made this trip possible. You made my awesome time in New York City and all of these great interactions I had with wonderful people. You made that possible. And as I mentioned in the previous shows, October has been a very, very big push to increase our subscriber base. So if you find value in this show, please go to schoolsucksproject.com/AV and sign up. I honestly don't have time to do all the little productions that you've been hearing at the beginning of the recent shows. I will put them at the end of the fourth part of this episode. That should be out sometime next week. But thank you so much, everybody. A couple of quick production notes. I will upgrade the microphones we're using before I take the show on the road again. These mics do have a lot of plosives, and I will definitely get that worked out. But as you listen to these shows, just keep in mind that this is a mobile setup. It was a very, very loud and distracting kind of event, and I did the best I could to, you know, find quiet spaces, set up interviews, and make them the best that they could possibly be given the circumstances. So my next excursion is to Keene, New Hampshire. The last weekend of October, I will be on a panel at Keenevention, and I'm looking for other things to get into there, maybe be a guest on some shows. But thanks to everybody who makes these things possible. I would really love to do something like this every month. And I got some good news in New York. Told you it was going to be a good networking experience. I met the person who was organizing Anarchapulco, and I might be able to go there for free if I agree to do a workshop with friend of the show, Dana Martin. So that's something that I'm seriously considering. That event is in February. But I would like to even squeeze in a couple more fun things before that, where I can go and meet the people and do interviews. I need to get out, you know? I love getting out. I just got back from a great weekend up north with more friends of the show, like Stephanie Murphy and Brian Sovereign from Conspirathon. You remember them. And of course, Wes Bertrand, we spent some time together as well. And the whole Puke in the Gang crew, what a tremendous weekend. So this is my new thing, leaving the house. I'm really into it right now. So find me more events. If I can figure out a way to get there, I will go. This New York trip was awesome. I made new friends. I saw old friends that I hadn't seen in years. Julia Toryanskaya and I went to an off-Broadway play. It was a musical comedy called How I Started the Iraq War. What a time we had. We stopped to see Richard and Lisa, Tragedy and Hope, in Connecticut. We even recorded the pilot episode of a new thing we're going to be doing called The Deep End. And I'm going to post a preview of that in the group sometime this week. So this first discussion, within the first hour or so that I was at the event, I see this girl at a vending table. And we make eye contact, so I saunter up to her. That's kind of a thing that I do. And I say, hey, what are you doing? Because she was at the t-shirt stand for We Are Change. We know We Are Change, the YouTube channel, Luke Rutkowski site. And we start talking and she says, I'm just minding this booth. My fiance is the webmaster for We Are Change and I'm a public school teacher in New Jersey. And I said, whoa, where are my microphones? We are doing an interview. She also revealed to me at that time that her fiance, Dave, a listener to School Sucks, is a high school dropout. And I said, okay, he's coming on the show too. And this was not meant to be confrontational. The woman's name was Jessica. I wanted to hear what her experiences were teaching in public school. She was like a 6 or 7 year veteran. So that's this discussion. Coming up in the next 10 days, Jeffrey Tucker, Carrie Wedler from the antimedia.org, and John Bush, who's been on the show before. He now runs the Brave New Books bookstore in Austin, Texas. So I've said enough. Let's get to it. Enjoy the show, everyone.
Cortesia.
That was the first word that was heard as the recording began. Cortesia.
Cortesia, yeah.
Oh, that's a beautiful pronunciation. My guests, I'm at Liberty Fest.
Correct.
And we're in Brooklyn, New York. I have my first two interview guests. You are a couple. Your name is Jessica.
Correct.
You are a public school teacher.
I am.
You teach Spanish in middle school.
Yes.
You're here to blow my views apart, I think.
Not on purpose.
You are joined by your fiance.
Correct.
Dave, who dropped out of school.
I sure did.
You claim, Jessica, to have always loved school and to think school is a good thing.
Yeah, I loved school. It was like my favorite experience. I liked school so much I never left.
Okay. And Dave, when did you leave?
I was 15 going 16, which is legally when you can leave. I was a sophomore in high school and I never went back. And my parents, my mom was a assistant to the administrative assistant. She was an administrative assistant at the elementary and middle school where we grew up. My dad was a custodian and they both fully supported. I was like, I really don't want to go. And they're like, okay. I'm like, really? That was easy. Okay.
Was it like one final thing that said, I got to get out of here?
I had a blast and I never did homework. I was like, this is, you know, homework pretty much breaks up the family anyway, but in my opinion, but I just didn't care. I just stayed home learning computers. I infected the entire school library computer system with a virus and I was able to communicate with my friends. I stayed home and now I own a computer company because I learned a lot more on my own.
And you are also the webmaster for We Are Change.
Yes.
And I'm sure the people in my audience are very familiar with that.
Yes.
Yeah.
WeAreChange.net. No, I'm just kidding. .org. With two E's. Yes. Run the website and gets a lot of traffic. It's a very fun thing when you have, if something goes wrong, it's like, hey, Dave, site's down. Dave, site, something wrong. Hey, Dave, site. I'm like, I know. Yeah, it's just a labor of love, and since I own my own business now, the sound you're hearing is actually the ceiling that's about to collapse onto us.
Yeah, this is
this may be the last one.
We're going to do a creative thinking exercise here in a minute.
Yeah, it's like school.
Yeah.
It's like the sound you hear when you're sitting in school. But yeah, so fine.
I've never school.
I don't know. But yeah, the school I went to, actually, they demolished it because it had asbestos, and I was there last year, so... But no, which is true. But we destroyed the school. We like wrote with marker on the walls and stuff. We were bad.
Oh, that must have been the greatest thing ever.
I'm saying I had a great time. I had a great friends. But I was writing music in class. Teachers would yell at me, and I was not bad like starting fires, but I was bad where I didn't do homework, and they put me in the bad class with like the kid that started fires and the girl that was in a wheelchair and me in like gym class. But for the first time in my life, I was excellent at kickball and I won every game. So
well, that's a nice story. That is a beautiful dropout success story. So Jessica, and by the way, the creative thinking exercise was, now the sound is actually stopped.
Momentarily.
But I'm trying to, I wanted to actually like enter some guesses into what is going on upstairs. We're just upstairs right now. We're in a room above a bar with an old white stand-up piano in it and a large mirror on the wall. This definitely looks like the kind of room where organized crime activities have taken place.
Like stage where the FBI is on the other side of that mirror.
Ah, yeah. It definitely looks
too obvious kind of thing.
But doesn't this room have like the feel of like somebody lost a finger or a toe in here?
Mm-hmm.
For some reason? Yeah, it does.
Mm-hmm.
But
in that drawer right there, it could be fingers galore in that thing.
Oh yeah, we should check the drawer for fingers.
Everything's bolted to the ground.
Upstairs, there is a tremendous amount of noise that sounds like it could either be like wrestling or a small horse farm.
To me, it sounds like our cats upstairs when they're fighting and we're at home in the middle of the night, or I'm by myself and Dave's away for the weekend.
We don't actually have any cats.
And they're wrestling, and I think there's like someone up there that's about to attack me. Mm-hmm. So maybe there are people that are going to come down and get us like at any moment. The FBI is going to run in, SWAT team. The state's coming to get me for talking to you.
Aww.
Well, we can take care of that by just making the seat noise in our chairs. Like yeah, squeaky chair.
We're also in some very creaky wooden chairs, so there's lots of sound obstacles. But I'm going to guess, I do hope we find out what is going on upstairs, but I think it might be like a boxing gym. Mm-hmm. Like people spawing. Like that, it has that kind of rhythm to it.
MMA, jiu-jitsu, Ronda Rousey's upstairs.
It doesn't sound like people hitting the floor hard, but it sounds like people could be like in a boxing ring right above us. Or
somebody locked in the room for the last 20 years and they want to get the fuck.
Oh my God, that's the saddest guess.
I'm sorry.
I hope not.
Tay.
We should at least go up there and check it out. So anyway, Jessica.
Yes.
You're a public school teacher. You taught in high school, you said, for 6 years.
Correct.
You now teach in middle school. This is really interesting to me. I have said so many times on School Sucks podcast, which you just learned about 15
yes.
minutes ago, that its existence, that middle school is the darkest time in a child's life. You're making a sad face. It was for me. I just remember, and now I think I had some of my own personal challenges, like I was overweight, I wasn't the coolest kid, I didn't have the best clothes, I wasn't good at sports, I got picked on a little bit. So maybe I'm kind of, you know, applying my own experiences a little bit too broadly across all of America's, the world's middle school students. But I see it as like this time where there really isn't a light at the end of the tunnel. Like you're not quite an adult yet, so you're still kind of so beholden to what adults want you to do, versus you get into high school, you can have a girlfriend, you can have, you know, you can drive a car, you can get a job, and you see like, oh, okay, the adult world is in sight now.
Right.
So middle school, just I've always presented it as this like super dark time, but you're going to tell me no. You're going to say that these kids light up your life.
They do.
Well, see, this is what I want. I want a counterbalance. I don't want somebody who's just going to come on the show and be like, God, Brett, you're so right about everything, and yeah, it sucks.
Right.
Like, I want to hear the positive experiences.
Okay.
I want this picture to be fully colored in. So you like teaching in middle school. You like talking to these kids.
I do. And actually, so I never planned on being a teacher ever, ever, ever.
Yeah.
I went to college and I said, I want to learn to speak another language. I want to like broaden my horizon. I want to be like culturally aware. I want to experience life. I want to travel. I want to do everything. And when I graduated, I didn't really have a plan. Mm-hmm. I had worked in a grocery store, and then my mom actually was a teacher in an alternative special education school for kids that just can't function in regular public schools.
Yeah.
And I was an aide there. And that was kids, I want to say, I think 13 to 21, because they actually can stay in school till 21. The state funds that. So I graduated and I'm a part-time aide in this school. And my mom says, so now what? And I was like, I don't know. I don't have a plan. And there happened to be a job at the high school that I went to. And she said, apply for it. And I you know, I have some interesting familial relationships, so I felt like I had to listen, and I applied, and I never even finished my application. I was like, forget it, I don't want to do this, and they called me, and I went on the interview, and I was like, okay, well, that was terrible. I'm never getting the job. And then they called me back, and then I went on my teaching interview when I like taught my first sample lesson. I didn't go to school for teaching. I had never been in front of kids. I'd never been in a classroom in that capacity before. And I said, okay, well, now this is over. I'm never hearing from these people. And they called me again and offered me the job.
Nepotism. Is that what it was? Is that what we're thinking it was?
I have no idea.
Well, I mean, I don't know about you, but I never had a teacher that looked like her when I was a kid.
Oh, yeah. She's certainly attractive.
Oh, the kids love you? Really? I would have. Of course.
But the girls like me too. It's not just, I actually, like, I have a really great relationship with both my male and female students. I don't feel like I get along better with one group of student or another.
Yeah.
But once I started teaching, I went through the alternate route program and I've never looked back. Well, that's not true. In the classroom, I've never looked back. A lot of the things that happen in the state and the government and, you know, like administrative tasks in teaching, observation tasks, stuff like that,
yeah.
That's been overwhelming. But in the classroom, I've never thought, like, I don't want to be with these kids. I don't want to teach. I don't, like, I'm disheartened or discouraged. Like, that is the thing that keeps me going. And I wake up every morning and I think, I'm going to school. I never think I'm going to work.
You know, you sound like you might be, the last part there sounded like you were shooting a commercial for the NJEA, but I totally believe you.
I'm really serious though.
No, I know that feeling. I remember that feeling too. And I remember, like, because I only ever worked in private school.
Right.
But I remember being like surrounded by like all of this stuff that was making my job more shitty. Even just the administration and the, no, you can't do that.
I wanted to know your. I always told her about private school. Like, you should check out private school. I didn't mean to stop your train of thought,
No.
I want to hear your opinion as someone that was in private school. Is that a how is your experience compared to public school? Just super curious about that. Was it better in some ways?
Well, I didn't get enough exposure to public school as a teacher. Like, I only ever student taught in public school, and then most of my exposure to public school was on the outside as a tutor. So I was meeting with teachers, I was meeting with administrators, I was trying to set up like SAT courses that would be done inside the school. So I saw a lot of different public schools, good public schools, like in the greater Boston area, from a variety of different interesting angles. And I went to graduate school with people who were already public school teachers in some very traditionally bureaucratic states, New York and Massachusetts. And all they did was complain about the amount of like regulation and what was being imposed on them and having to teach to test. So it sounds like you kind of have that awareness of that, Jessica,
of course,
going on outside of the classroom.
Right.
But you're not letting it affect your interactions with.
No.
Now, you're not even 30.
Nope,
so we're going to do a follow-up. We're going to do a follow-up in 20 years.
Okay.
We're going to see where you're at.
Okay.
We're going to see how your attitude is.
She makes more money and she hates it. Like,
right. Here you go. But you've been doing it seven years.
Yes.
Yeah. And I mean, that's a long time. That's, I think, a substantial amount of time to know whether it's something you want to do as a career or not.
Right.
And do you get any support from your peers as far as like, well, I guess the first thing I want to know is like, what are people really complaining about? And then David, I will answer your question. I will come back to that.
Okay, so here's the other thing too. I've worked in four different schools.
Okay.
So I went back to my high school. I taught there for 3 years. Then there was not a job available for me anymore after those 3 years. And then I went and I took a maternity leave position for 1 year at another school. Then I was at another high school for 2 years, and now I'm at a middle school. And so I've had a lot of different perspectives, a lot mm-hmm. of different experiences with other teachers. And a lot of people complain like there's too much paperwork. You know, the administration isn't on the same page. There's a lot of fighting over contracts. Teachers say like, it's not like it used to be. We have to use technology in the classroom. It becomes a lot more complicated. There's so many more meetings. Obviously I'm a Spanish teacher, so I'm not subject to this, but there's now all of the Common Core teaching and when I first started, there weren't a lot of end of year tests that now there are a lot more end of year tests for biology, for There's a math end of year test now that we didn't used to have. Now there's PARC instead of HESPA, which is longer.
Mm-hmm.
And that won't be the same in the middle school. But so those are the different things that I kind of hear, I've heard throughout my teaching career in the different schools that I've taught in.
It's interesting that like most of my criticisms of school, you seem to escape by teaching a foreign language, at least as far as I know. Common Core has been one of them.
Right.
Indoctrination.
Yep.
Has been another one. Like, you guys are obvious, like, you're plenty familiar with We Are Change.
Yes.
Right? So we know that the media is one tool of basically controlling thought. I would say that school is the most powerful tool of all time. I would say in many ways it's set up to do that.
Right.
But go ahead.
Well, you start out, a lot of families, they have a baby. They put the baby into daycare as soon as the baby's one.
Yeah.
With strangers, where you, Stefan Molyneux was just talking about this with someone, but you outsource your child care with someone that makes, you know, minimum wage of child care. Child gets to be five, goes to school till they're 18, then goes to college, and then it's 21 years,
yeah,
of like other people raising this person, where you're, you know, in my opinion, being taught to memorize stuff rather than understand things and think outside the box. And it's just interesting because it starts even before five with daycares for a lot of parents instead of staying home with the child.
Yeah, it's interesting that like a lot of the most formative experiences and times in a person's life, are spent with people who don't really love them or care or are deeply invested in their success. So You're grinning, Jessica. I was just going to say, I like the fact that I meet someone who's been at this more than 5 years and you still have a lot of enthusiasm.
I love
it's
them.
It's good for kids.
I love them, yeah, so much.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I don't want to be a parent. Mm-hmm. And I'm not 30 yet, so my inner clock hasn't begun ticking. But the older I get, the more firm I am in that belief that I do not want my own children for a variety of different reasons. And I feel like there's a part of me that gets very fulfilled with that, you know, the maternal instinct. But I really, really love those kids. Like, I come in and I'm like, maybe I'm angry in the morning, or I had a stressful morning because I woke up late and I'm always nervous. Like, the state's going to get me. I'm going to be 5 minutes late. And and I get very like, yeah, the invisible gun is like, God's got it, you know, pointed at my head. And then I get in the classroom and they're smiling and they're like ready to learn. And they say hi to me and good morning. And how are you? And they speak to me in Spanish. And, you know, like, then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, today's going to be great because I'm going to teach kids to learn another language today.
Well, with, you know, not having kids, Bill Burr said, you don't want to be the guy with the boat. You want to be the guy that's friends with the guy with the boat.
Right. Yeah. You know, I've noticed that a lot from being an uncle. See, for me, it's different because I would like to be helpful in more of the hard times, because even though it's not my place, I would like to be able to coach both of my brothers, you know, and they're kind of like opposite extremes. Like, my middle brother is more of like a disciplinarian.
Oh,
and my youngest brother is kind of like a really permissive and like more of the friendship relationship with his kids. And, you know, I always like want to have this conversation, like, you guys need to meet in the middle, you know, like, don't just let anything happen. And when I say that, I mean, you want young children to understand like cause and effect relationships. Like, doesn't mean punishment, anything like that.
Like helicopter dad versus tie-dye dad.
Yeah, exactly.
Sometimes so having your own kids, it's nice to be involved and to be able to participate in kids' lives. But at the end of the day, after you're, you know, done coaching, or it's nice to also be able to go home and
buy a speedboat.
Yeah.
What are you going to do with all this disposable income?
Right. You know, it's funny. I never even thought about that because I've always been in the same boat that I don't really have much of a desire to have children of my own. And I wonder if that was taken care of by all the time I spent with kids. I don't know. Public school versus private school. See how we just went all the way back to that? I think institutionalized schooling is more of a problem for me than public versus private. And I think that this model of this person is at the front of the room, they know what to do. If you sit there and be quiet, and I understand you're saying, Jessica, that's not maybe how your classroom works. A foreign language class doesn't really work like that. But that milieu, that kind of environment is in the backdrop of most schools. You know, the person at the front of the room knows most. You can submit things to them and they'll tell you if you know enough or not. And they'll use this scale to basically rate your intelligence.
I was a kid in the back sleeping with this bag, trying so hard to just get some sleep.
Oh, yeah.
You know, being, I was it was mathematically impossible for me to pass English class in my sophomore year. So they put me in, you know, some room, you know, to do like work. I'm like, yes. And I would just sit on the computers and like make stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, it was the best thing I ever did. That was the best class I ever had, was the class that was not a class.
Yeah. Yeah. That was my experience, too. The classes where they're like, Brett, and everyone's looking at me.
Yeah.
This was really bad for me in middle school. Because I had like all these drawing projects that I wanted to do. I'd be like, I don't even know what's going on.
They make you read in front of class and you're like, it's like the most horrifying experience.
It was like answering a question and I didn't even hear what the question was because I was paying so little attention.
And that's when
and
you go, really
ashamed.
Joke. Like, you know, insert jerk joke here.
Instead of being like, you should be ashamed, miss. I'm bored. Why am I bored? I wish I knew what I know. So Jessica, tell me the best part of your job. Tell me this and then...
Well, there are a lot of things that Dave and I have discussed and some things that we agree on, some things we disagree on, and we've had vastly different experiences. Like I said, I love school so much I never left, but my favorite part about school or my job is the kids.
Yeah.
I love them.
And do you think they know that?
Yes, I do. Like I said, I taught at a high school for 2 years and I have kids. They saw me and I left that school not because of the kids, but because I did not like the administration and I didn't really like the feeling that foreign language was not important. I think being able to communicate with people is one of the most important skills you have.
Yeah.
And to be able to broaden your ability to communicate with not just people who are like you, but people who come from different places and stuff like that. So I didn't really like the culture of the school. So I left, but I saw these kids after I left and I didn't find out I was leaving till summer. So I didn't say goodbye. Saw them in a diner. And I mean like kid after kid, they just came up and, oh my gosh, senorita, how are you? Like, why'd you leave? We miss you so much. Can I like take a picture with you and put it on Snapchat? And, you know, like, can I give you a hug? And how are you? And you know, how's Dave? Cause my kids know about Dave. Or how are your cats or whatever, you know, like.
They thought I was a cat for a while.
or they like friend request me on Facebook. And, you know, so I really have been very lucky. But I think that I don't think that kids would react that way if they didn't know that I cared about them.
I agree. I think that makes a huge difference. And yeah, my experience was different. Like anytime I saw a kid or like thought about a kid that I used to teach, I wanted to apologize to them because I felt like I was so full of shit when I was teaching. Like I loved what I was doing. I just didn't know shit about what I was teaching.
Like but I tell my kids all the time, like, they'll ask me, like, what's a word or what's this or what that? I don't know. Let's look it up. I'm not sure. I have no idea. So we're going to have, what do you mean? You don't know everything about Spanish? I said, no, I don't know everything about English. And that's my first language. Forget about knowing about everything Spanish. I learned the same way that you guys are learning. And I think, like, I relate to the kids in that aspect, too. Like, I'm Irish and German. I am not Latina. I am not Hispanic. I have no friends that speak Spanish. I don't have relatives that speak Spanish. My fiance doesn't speak Spanish. So like people in my immediate personal life don't speak the language that I speak. So I relate to those kids because we learned the same way.
That's a really great way to learn. I just thought of when you were saying that when I took guitar lessons, we wouldn't just open up a book with the stuff already made. We would actually listen note by note and figure out the lead solo instead of just getting the book. And I feel like that's a great, and I retained that info and learned a lot better than instead of memorizing. I feel like that's what you do with, I don't know, let's look it up. And it gets them, instead of just saying, okay, the word is blah, 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 memorize. Right? I don't know. That's what it seems like.
Like in my previous school, they were allowed to use their cell phones and they had, Chromebooks. So like, look it up. I'm not just going to give you the answer all the time. Even if I do know the answer, I'm not always just going to feed the answer to you because you don't remember. So you're more likely to remember if you look it up yourself, if you do the work. And if it's important to you, you will. And if it's not important to you, then you won't. And that's okay.
Well, you tend to value things more if you earn them.
Correct.
You know, so if we're just handing out presents called piece of information, here you go, everybody, free information. Yeah, I think that that has kind of a different effect. And especially if you establish, I think I made this mistake because like I taught in environments where most of my job was geared towards behavioral interventions.
Right.
So there were a lot of times where I was just like, fuck it, the answer's B, you know, because that wasn't the focus of my job. That was like my first teaching job. I worked in a very challenging environment. And what that set up was, oh, you'll just give us the answers.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. When I moved on to this other job where I feel like I owe a lot of the apologies, I was teaching history and I had a lot of good information. Like I had a lot of historical facts and I think I had interesting ways to organize them. But I was like very left wing. So I was skewing the entire message with this perspective that I had about the world and how it worked.
Right.
You know, George Bush was president. And so I was very much like, oh, yeah, John Kerry guys.
Right.
Yay. You know,
I remember you.
Yeah. 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 That kind of a thing. I think we can wrap up. I want to say that was a very interesting and unexpected conversation that was initiated no more than 45 minutes ago when we all came face to face for the first time. It had some interesting twists and turns. We covered some subjects I didn't expect to, but for two people that I've known less than an hour, I have to say that went very, very well. And I appreciate you being willing to come on the show. It wasn't like you just schooling me for 45 minutes about how great school is. But I'm happy.
I wasn't doing most of the talking for 45 minutes.
I'm really happy to hear, even though it kind of goes against the narrative that I push, which is obviously informed by a lot of my own personal experience, especially when I was the age of the kids that you teach.
Right.
That you're having a good time there. You know, even though you don't have, you know, a perfectly consistent with the mainstream set of beliefs.
Right.
You're friends with Luke Rutkowski, obviously, and getting married to his webmaster. But to hear that the kids are having a good time there, too.
Right. But I think it's important to have that balance. Like, so I loved school and I'm pro school and I really enjoyed that experience. But I think it's good and important and really shaped me as a teacher to have someone like my fiance in my life who challenges my beliefs and pushes me to be a better teacher, because I don't want to just say, like, I'm just doing what the state tells me to do, or I'm just doing what the school tells me to do, or my boss or my principal. But really, like, wrapping my head around someone who, you know, like I didn't have a good experience. How do I include those kids?
Yeah.
The kids that don't like to be in school, how do I get to them? How do I reach them? How do I say someone cares about you and I'm that person and like I really want to be there for you and we're going to get through Spanish together, but I want you to know that I'm going to be your partner in life. And if you need me in any capacity, not just in the classroom, but like I'm going to be there for you and I want to be that person. And I think like, you know, being friends with or experiencing things in other capacities, I've been able to kind of shape my teaching in that way too. Mm-hmm.
The same goes for me, where I never knew a teacher like you. And seeing the way she does, like, care so much about these kids, it makes me, from the opposite angle, be like, wow, that's good. There should be you in, like, all aspects of school, you know, to help shift it in the right direction, you know?
Right. Now, I have to be honest, like, I don't want school to survive.
Of course.
The 21st century.
No, I agree.
You know, and I want people like you who have this gift and have this motivation and have this interest and investment in kids to thrive even more.
Right.
You know,
institutionalized schooling.
Right? Yeah, exactly. I want education, obviously, mm-hmm. to survive. And that's
right,
been kind of the big distinction in my show, is schooling versus education. So people who are true educators like you, who manage to work every day and be successful and be happy and make other people unhappy in that system. That was why I wanted to bring you on today. And you both did fantastic. So
thank you
so much.
Thank you very much.
Awesome.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please help us out by leaving a positive review on iTunes. If you were angered by the show, please help us out by leaving negative reviews everywhere. If you think this is an important message for students, for parents, or for the future of intellectual freedom, please consider supporting us. SchoolSucksProject.com/AV. For $6 a month, you'll get access to hundreds of additional hours of content while helping us grow and spread this message further.